Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to episode 189 of Geek Town Radio. I'm back this week with Bex. How are you doing?
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm all right, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
No broken limbs, no throat problems, all
no,
good?
No additional ones.
Good. I'm glad to see we have practically a whole person there, which is useful.
Pretty much. I can't, guarantee 100% brain power, but definitely sort of starting to get back to full mobility, which is always nice. I was starting to look up on eBay for cyborg rocket-powered legs, but it looks like this one's going to heal up.
Damn it. Would have been a perfect excuse for a rocket-powered leg.
Yeah, I'm not sure why I'd need an excuse for a rocket-powered leg, but meh.
Well, it seems a bit wasteful to hack off a perfectly functional limb,
Yeah, I think I should go to dark places now.
Anyway, so what have you been up to in the sort of month or so since you've last been on?
Had I started watching The 3% when we last spoke? I'm not sure I had.
I don't think you had, no.
No, because I've completely finished binge-watching the rest of Gotham up to the end of that.
Nice.
While I was very ill and couldn't concentrate on anything proper. And Gotham was pretty much the only thing I could cope with, because if I forgot what was going on, it didn't matter, because anyone who was dead had come back to life, and the plot made so little sense at some points and so many things were happening at once that I could just kind of be like, ooh, flashy, funny colours and
yes,
something's occurring. And I quite enjoyed it for all of the complete nonsense that it is now become such a self-aware, stupid series. Like when you've got obviously the Joker, but not the Joker, trying to get back at his twin, who he's obviously going to turn into the Joker. And he's got a brass band playing the Batman TV theme tune from the original series. You're like, yeah, no, they've really sort of just embraced the fact that what they're making is like high-budget car crash telly.
Yeah. I mean, it sort of started off trying to be something very different in its first season, and it was sort of midway through the second season, they just decided, screw it, and just threw everything at the screen to see what stuck. So
yeah, it's ridiculous, but it's enjoyable if you just detach it from being anything to do with Batman and just watch it as something preposterous. Definitely very entertaining when you're really ill and you're stuck in the house.
Yeah. And the characters are great. I think particularly I like Penguin and Riddler, and I think and it is a really good version of Joker as well.
Mixed everything, because they started off trying to make him a little bit like Joker, like the original Joker, and then they started throwing in the new 52 stuff with the face being cut off and stapled back on, and all the time saying he wasn't Joker, and now they've changed him again, and obviously they're on the third actress for Ivy now, and it's so silly, but there are some really good bits in it. Like you say, the relationship between Penguin and Riddler is really wonderfully done, and I do love the Penguin origin story stuff as well. I think that works really well, and that's actually adding something in that is kind of new information for me. Other than that though, they took a splattergun with loads of keywords they got by reading a Wikipedia on Batman and then just did whatever. And the fact we have Julian Bashir as Ra's al Ghul,
I had to
pause it and go, what the but it made me giggle, it entertained me, and the Tabitha and Butch kind of on again off again relationship I really liked as well, and those characters were they had some well put together characters in a complete crazy world. It sort of brought back the feeling to me a little bit of when I used to watch Revenge and things like Leverage,
oh yeah,
and those kind of things that they know they're silly, you just kind of have to go with it. So quite enjoyable. And then after I'd finished with that, I was starting to feel a bit better.
Yes.
So I could go on to some actual good telly. So I watched the entire first two seasons of The 3%.
Yes, this is this sci-fi drama. It's on Netflix, isn't it? But it's Brazilian. It's a Brazilian drama, so it's all in Spanish.
Portuguese, yeah.
Portuguese, it's, okay.
It's really, really good. They have got a dub version as well, which isn't too bad. I watched a little bit in the dub just to see. And they've done a fairly good job with it. Obviously, it is dubbed, so I find that always I prefer to watch in the original language. But for people who don't do so well with subtitles, they have put effort in to make something watchable that's right. Dubbed. That's kind of cool. It's a nice dystopian future, slightly cyberpunky type world. It doesn't cover, for people that read a lot of sci-fi and cyberpunk, it doesn't cover any particularly new ground.
Right.
Because it is that age-old thing of you've got one part of society, which is most of the people, they've got no, you know, they haven't got access to the latest technology. That's called kind of slums. And then you've got 3% in this case of the population live on the offshore, which is all of the high tech, all of the resources, and it's like they're like, you know, the second class citizens to the offshore. And you can go through I keep reading things that say, oh, people are comparing it to the Hunger Games, but it's really nothing like the Hunger Games.
Right.
But when you hit 20 years old, you can go through a process, and if you're deemed worthy and you pass all these tests, you're allowed to become part of the 3% and go to the offshore. If you don't, you can never try it again.
Right.
So
okay.
There's kind of cults sort of always rising up, like a religion rising up around the process, and it's the people in the offshore, some of them are trying to convince themselves that this is a worthy process that you're supposed to go through, and it's right that the world is right in order to cope with it all. And right. That if you don't pass, it's because you need to stay where you are and you don't deserve to be part of the 3%. And then obviously there's terrorist kind of uprisings that want to put an end to it and want to take away the kind of inequality and do something else. And it's really well acted and put together. It starts off a little bit slow, but they use their budget really well, because they give you this impression of a very oppressive, sort of slightly off world, and using sort of big empty, I don't know if it's a massive empty office block or something they're using for some of it, but it just, by having no decoration anywhere and just having these big plain coloured walls and people in slightly futuristic, very plain coloured suits, and then the people from the offshore in kind of scraggly rags of clothing and doing the best they can, they've managed to really cleverly create a really good atmosphere. I was impressed.
Yeah, it's not one I've got to yet, but I will have to go and check that out, because there's two seasons of it by the looks of things.
I watched the first episode and then I was like, oh, this is a slightly slow one that I need to pay attention to. I need to go back to this. And then now I had gone back to it, I basically binge watched it.
Okay.
And so I was like, I just needed to kind of be in the right mood to have something of that kind of pace.
Yeah.
But it gets really, really good as it goes on. They've completely wrap up the story at the end of the second season, but they've renewed it for a third.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I mean, they left it open at the end of the... I can't really say anything that happens without completely ruining it. But
yeah.
The end of the second season, you clearly could have just stopped there.
Yeah, so...
Because it has like a sort of almost movie-style ending where it's like, this isn't the end of the story, but it's the end of our experience of it.
Right.
But yeah, apparently they've renewed it for a third season, which is going to come out, I mean, it says this year.
Yeah.
Which is quite a quick turnaround for it, so I'll be interested to see what happens.
Yes, it was renewed in June last year, so it's been renewed for a while.
Okay, I must have read that wrong, because I was reading articles saying it had just been renewed.
Oh, okay.
Just like a couple of weeks ago, so maybe they just hadn't announced it.
Maybe, but apparently it was renewed in June last year, so...
Okay, so maybe they are already working on it.
Hopefully. You would hope at this point.
I'm interested to see where it goes from here, because it's going to have to be a very different arc of plot for the next series. It's going to have to move forward quite a bit, which isn't a bad thing. It could be cool to expand that world further. Because sometimes you get to the end of stories like this and think, oh no, I kind of want to know what happens 10 years later when the world's changed in this way. And maybe they'll do that, because there's a year gap between the first and second season.
Right, okay.
Which entirely makes sense for the plot. It would have been very, very boring to have covered the entire year in between when nothing was happening.
Right,
But it works, so I'm wondering if they'll do an even bigger jump to the next season.
Okay.
We'll see. Had I finished watching the rest of iZombie last time we spoke?
I don't think so. No, I think you'd started.
I'm up to date on that, finally.
That's due back May, 3rd of May. for the fifth and final season of that. So
yes, bring it back for my birthday. I think that's what that is.
It's the day after my birthday. So
yeah, there we go. See, they've brought it back just for us for a final series. I really, really love it. It's one of my favourite comedy drama series is going, and I love the direction they've taken with it, because it had that potential to just be a bad guy of the week procedural thing, and they managed to use all the good bits of procedural cop dramas and then also throw in the massive overarching plot and have it as a continuing series where you could kind of just dip in and out of it, although by this point it's pretty much turned into primarily you're following a main plot. It's really good. It's really fun. And I can't wait to see the end of that one. What else have I been watching? I've just started watching Titans.
Okay. Yes. That I am going to be very interested to see what your reaction to it is, because I've finished it.
I've seen an episode and a half, because you texting me saying it's 1 o'clock was when I went, I better pause this. So I'm 20 minutes into the second episode. I'm assuming this first series, based on the two episodes I've seen, is one episode per character. Let's set up the characters.
There is a certain amount of that, yes. Yes, I think I said previously, I mean, the whole first season is pretty much them getting together, and it's a similar...
I was getting that feeling from what I'd seen so far, and I was a little bit like, I see why they have to do that, but it's quite a big cast, and that's going to take quite a lot of episodes, so it takes up a lot of this first series.
Yeah, basically, and it ends in a slightly odd way for me as well, but I won't go into that because, you know, I don't want to spoil it.
It's a slightly odd series.
Yeah.
I'm already getting this feeling that I'm not quite sure on the tone of it. Some of the effects in it I'm finding a little bizarre, like in the fight scenes where they've added the CGI blood.
Right, yeah.
And there are points, I mean, again, this is just the first episode and a half, but there are definitely points where I'm like, they clearly haven't hit that person hard enough or scraped that person across the wall anywhere near hard enough to leave this massive blood stain or have this, like, it sort of feels like they added it after.
Yeah.
And the choreography in the fight scenes, I haven't seen a single punch that looked like it hit.
Right, okay.
Like, nothing looks like it's making contact, and occasionally you see someone do a flip or a cartwheel or a thing and you're like, that's okay, that's an acrobat that's brought in to do, or a stunt double that's brought in to do that, but all the rest of it, no one feels like they're committing to any of the fight choreography. And they feel like they're framing some shots to make it look really cool, but because people aren't fully committed to holding their fist there or having Robin's staff extend at that point, it all falls really flat, and it gives it the impression of being low budget, because you get that sometimes with lower budget stuff where they can't afford to train up people to do fight scenes enough, they can't afford to get in actors who can do everything required for the role, and it really has that feeling that I just can't take the fight scene seriously because they look like something that's choreographed to look cool for budget telly.
It's interesting that I hadn't particularly noticed that, but having said that, I'm watching The Punisher at the moment, and this is sort of DC's attempt to do that grittier sort of Daredevil Punisher level stuff, and it is interesting comparing the two, because The Punisher obviously is incredibly violent, and there is a certain amount of that, which I think you're probably right. I hadn't quite figured out what was slightly off with it, but yes, that's quite possibly true.
It's very strange to watch, and I've only watched an episode and a half, so I can't completely judge it, but right now I'm feeling like I'm watching a show about the Titans written by an edgelord teenager.
Right, yeah.
It really, really is feeling, and I know obviously you have characters like Raven, who is very much, she is a very trope type character. She's a goth and she's a demon. But I'm kind of feeling everyone seems to be like that, and I get they're going for gritty and dark. There's just something really, really written by a teenager rather than aimed at teenagers.
Yeah,
kind of feeling about it.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, I don't want to completely slam the writers of this. I don't know what the brief was. I don't entirely know who the audience was, but it seems like it's aimed at adults based on the level of violence and things. And some bits I'm enjoying, and I think I will try more of it.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, so something doesn't feel quite right. It feels like they were trying very hard to write something edgy, which never works.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, I had I had a few issues with the way that it's plotted. It's got that jumps around quite a lot. So, you know, you are having episodes. Not every episode is following individual characters. You know, there is a sort of overarching plot mainly to do with following Raven. A lot of the plot is about Raven, which I thought was an odd pick. Because it's sort of the whole thing's really you thought would be about Dick Grayson, but it isn't.
Well, Raven gives you a world-ending level event plot.
Yeah, that was
she's so, the one. If you make the plot around Dick Grayson, there's only so big your thing can be. But if they're going for superpowers and they have someone like Starfire in there, I can see why they might want to do a bigger plot, and Raven is the obvious choice.
Yeah.
To do that around, because they've aged Raven down a bit, really, yeah, compared to the others.
Yeah, that is
there,
true.
There's much more of an age gap than you would expect. So yeah, they want to use her for that purpose. And I think the actress playing Raven, I mean, none of the acting is horrific. I'm more questioning the tone and the style and the script and other things rather than the acting specifically. But the girl playing Raven is doing a very good job, because that's quite a difficult character to play. And I don't recognize her. I'm assuming this is her first big role, unless I've just missed her in something else. But she seems to be holding her own quite well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of with you on that. I think the acting's very good. I do like the overall world they've created as well. I mean, I like this sort of darker universe thing that they've created. I'm sort of with you I on the plotting side of things. I'm not entirely convinced the plot holds together, and it does. The entire thing ends at a very odd point as well. So what's some more, I would be interested to see what your opinion is at the end of it.
A bit further, but I think at the point where they had a quite I don't know if I want to blame the choreography, but a badly executed mass fight scene which completely did not sit right and none of the punches landed in, and then have Dick Grayson say, well, I won't use the literal words because the family, screw Batman, let's say, and just saying that almost to camera. I just sat there going, oh yeah, you want to be edgy, and I'm not sure that landed.
Yes,
it sort of almost made it campy.
Yeah, I'm sort of with you on the whole idea of them trying to specifically write it to be edgy rather than it just being edgy.
It's a Batman universe based show. If you're going to have a lot of, you know, Robin / Nightwing, I'm assuming he's going to become Nightwing because of his age, and the this part of DC, anything that's connected to these kind of characters, they're already really dark.
Yeah,
like I don't understand how they're failing to make a dark. I mean, you look at Gotham, it's like it's set in Gotham, it's really really dark, everything's miserable, yet they've basically made a comedy. And now I'm looking at Titans. I'm like, this is dark. These are characters that do have some dark aspects to their past. And somehow, I'm going to have to watch some more to make a final judgment. But my initial reaction was kind of pulling a slightly strange expression and wondering quite how this happened.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that, again, you know, DC are sort of had looked, I think, at things like Daredevil and gone, oh, let's do something a bit like that, and not done it quite as well. So, you know.
They do dark so well in the comics.
I know, it's weird. It's weird. I don't know why it's not quite landed as well. And it's from Berlanti and Geoff Johns. And Geoff Johns' comic book writing is great. And Berlanti's other DC TV shows are great, if, you know, a lot lighter. But, yeah.
If something in the execution and something, or something in the first line of the brief for when they put this together, is just
doesn't
at odds with what they're trying to do.
It's
just strange. I'm just going to be very confused about this for a while, I think.
It's one of those things that I think could have a really, really, really good second season, but they need to kind of figure a few things out in the first season. So,
but will it get darker and better and more serious, or will it go Gotham? And they'll just be like, we missed on the serious guys, have everything.
I don't know. Either way, if they could sort out the darkness so it works better, or if they just like go screw it and we're just going to throw everything at it, either of those I think would work for me, you know. So we'll see where it ends up, but I think there is a lot of potential to it. I just don't think the first season quite works as well as it needed to, but we'll see where it goes. It's got what, 10 episodes or whatever, or 8 or 10 episodes, so we'll see.
One of the things it's sort of almost reminding me of, for the wrong reasons, is Kick-Ass. Very very slightly, something about the way the costumes are coloured and everyone's overly being serious. It's because I'm watching Hawk and Dove at the moment. That's the second episode, and they're in the end of the first episode. Something about them was reminding me of some of the stuff in the first Kick-Ass movie.
Yes, that is actually quite true. I don't know
that
connection.
Just because there's a young girl with purple hair, short hair in it. It's definitely something to do with Hawk and Dove reminding me a little bit of Kick-Ass.
Interesting. Yes, I'd not made that connection, but I could see where you're coming from with that.
I don't think it's supposed to.
No, probably not. Oh well, we'll see how the rest of it plays out. But I'll be interested.
It's going to be one which I think we're going to talk about again. There's something I did finally watch really late to the party on this one. I've seen Solo.
Okay, good. What did you think?
I thought it was all right.
Yeah,
that's an unpopular opinion, isn't it? Yeah. It's all right. I really don't have strong feelings either way.
I have to say, I thought Eldon, whatever his name is, the guy that played Solo, I thought it was brilliant. And there are little points in that where he looks like he's channeling Harrison Ford. And
I thought it was just like, it just felt like a sort of nice sci-fi heist movie that you could watch even if you had no idea what Star Wars was. Yeah. And I kind of viewed it like that. A couple of things irritated me a bit with it. I wasn't sure about the whole, I don't know whether or not to call it a love interest thing going with the droid.
Yeah, yes.
I wasn't sure what they were quite going for with that. It was a little bit peculiar, but that's not really, it's not consequential to the plot especially or anything, so that was fine. But yeah, I just enjoyed it. It was just all right. And so many people were really angry about it, really disappointed about it. And I was just sort of like, I'm just completely middle of the road on this. It's a perfectly acceptable, enjoyable, stick on in the background with your mates around kind of film.
Yeah.
It had some nice bits. It obviously had a lovely amount of budget to make it all look nice and snazzy. And I quite liked the chasing of the train plotline and stuff. It's just nice.
Yeah, I was perfectly okay with it. I really didn't have any kind of horrendous vitriol towards it. I thought it was...
I'd like to do a review on it, but it would be really, really boring to watch.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You're just sitting there going, it's fine.
This is okay. This irked me a bit, but it wasn't really consequential. This bit was pretty. This was kind of nice. No one did anything terrible. No one did anything exceptional. Yeah. Then I had some popcorn.
That was sort of my opinion of it. It's perfectly fine as a film. It's perfectly watchable. It's a fun heist movie. That's it. I don't know what people were so upset about, to be honest.
It's Star Wars.
Yeah.
People will be upset.
Because it's Star Wars.
Or something. Extreme emotions are brought out.
Yes.
By anything that exists a long time ago, far, far away kind of thing. Yeah. I think people like to be polarized about Star Wars. It gets a lot of hits on YouTube to have a very strong opinion on Star Wars, I think is definitely a factor.
Yes.
The other thing I watched, which I watched this morning, because I was away for the weekend at my niece's birthday and was unable to watch it, was the first episode of Star Trek Discovery Season 2.
Ah, yes. Thoughts?
I quite like it.
Yes.
I am slightly confused by some things. And the bit where she goes into the quarters and is looking at things like the personal logs of people.
Yes.
Why was she allowed in there? That's such an epic thing to base a plot for an entire series on. It's information she's got by being in someone else's bedroom. Why was she allowed in there? Like that really, really threw me. I was sort of watching the scene thinking, this is supposed to be quite an emotional, important scene for a primary character, but she's basically poking around at someone else's stuff in their room on a different ship where she really shouldn't be allowed. There's no reason why privacy should be allowed to invade it. No reason at all why she should have been allowed to do that. And it sort of took me out of what was supposed to be a weighted moment. I did enjoy a lot of the episode, and I wasn't incredibly keen on bits at the end of the last series because I kind of felt like, I can't remember who said it, I should really look up who said it, but somebody did a review of the last season and they said, why at the end of the series did giving somebody an iPad mean that she could control the planet, and why did anyone else believe that her iPad could do that? And I was like, that's absolutely brilliant way of wording it. And there's been a few bits like that where I'm just going, okay, but this, within the world I'm looking at, I'm not quite sure why this has worked or this is allowed or this has happened.
Right, okay.
I'm going to have to see where things go, but I do enjoy it. I like quite a few of the characters. I'm hoping they'll make Tilly slightly less irritating. I did prefer evil Tilly. But I do like her character, but I think they need to work on the kind of things, because otherwise she's going to have to walk into a room and go, hi, I'm Cookie and I talk too much.
Yes.
I need her to be a little bit more developed. Yeah, she's an interesting character.
They've dialed up the kookiness a bit too much, I think, this time around. Yeah, I would like that dialed back a little bit.
To relate to.
Yeah.
Because before she was clearly very nervous. Now she's much more established.
Mm.
And they're using the kind of kooky talk too much social anxiety thing as a way of conveying everything she does now.
Yeah, yeah. They could do with dialing that down a little bit. Otherwise it's going to get very annoying.
And I can't really complain about captains and first mates going on dangerous away missions that they obviously like wouldn't ever do because of chain of command, because Star Trek's always been like that.
Yes.
That's one of the things that makes it more authentically Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, I'm liking Anson Mount as Pike. I think he's really good. I'm very interested to see where they go with that character, particularly. I mean, I love Jason Isaacs last season. I thought he was great, but I think Pike's an interesting character to sort of take over and be in charge.
I like how different he is, and they're presenting him as not a perfect character, as a flawed character, because everyone in this is flawed, obviously. No one's happy in this series, but they are presenting him in a way that's believable and quite likable. Like once he's found his place with the crew and things, because obviously this first episode he's getting to know people and they're setting boundaries and things, but once he's established, I think he could be a brilliant addition, and I definitely like his portrayal of Pike as well.
Yeah,
I like that slightly more swaggery, remind you a bit of the original series type feel.
Yeah. What's going to be kind of interesting is how long he sticks around, because I rather suspect that he may only be around for the one season. This could end up being a ship that ends up with a different captain every season.
Well, Pike can't stay the captain of it because...
because he's got to go back to the Enterprise.
he just can't, and that is, you know, as always, the problem with making things that are prequels, as with Gotham and things. You know what characters can't die and where they're going to go if they have an established plot point. I am wondering what exactly they're going to do about the Spock situation.
We've posted stories about this, so I can give you an answer to that if you genuinely want to know.
I've been avoiding spoilers, so I've asked a question I don't know the answer to, which is probably quite foolish on my part.
That's fine. So yes, you will get an answer to that one way or another.
That's good. That's all I need to know.
One other thing with the Star Trek stuff as well is the short treks are on the Netflix UK service finally, but you may not have noticed them.
I read that they were up there, but I just wanted to watch Discovery when I got back this morning, so I jumped straight to that.
There's only four of them. They're around 15 minutes to 18 minutes long, so there is only around an hour-ish, slightly over an hour of them. If you want to go and find them, they're not immediately obvious. You've got to go to Star Trek Discovery, scroll to the trailers and more bit, scroll past all the trailers, and they're at the bottom, those four things. So they've buried them on the service.
Do we have to do a handstand and put in a special code? Is this like Bandersnatch?
It is a bit like that. I don't know why they've decided to just bury them there rather than just stick them on the end of Discovery Season 1, but that's where they've put them. So, if you want to find the short treks, it's Star Trek Discovery, trailers and more, scroll to the bottom, they're there. So they're worth watching, actually. There's a little one with Tilly, there's one with Harry Mudd, and there's a couple of other kind of interesting things, but they're not directly, as far as I'm aware at the moment, related to stories within the main Discovery show. But they're worth watching, so they're good. Discovery is obviously one of the things I've been watching this week. Punisher was the other thing that came onto Netflix this week, which I've been watching. I'm about five episodes into that. I'm really enjoying this series, actually. Has a really nice start. It's very sort of simple. Frank has pretty much been cleared as he was at the end of season one, but he's living under an alias as to not upset the sort of various authorities. He's kind of taken an alias and he's trying to sort of live under the radar. He's in this bar, he's flirting with the barmaid, just sat drinking. This girl walks in, looks very nervous. He clocks her as she walks in and keeps an eye on her because he thinks there's something not quite right there. It then transpires that a bunch of people come in chasing after her and he ends up going to save her, and all hell breaks loose from there. That's basically the sort of premise in the setup. So it's Frank protecting this girl. But it's a really solid start. I'm 5 episodes in, really enjoying it. It's sort of very much the aftermath of season one and what happened with Billy Russo and their continuing bits of that story. They've said that they are prepped and ready to go if they do want a season 3 on Netflix, but I think everybody is expecting it to be cancelled, regardless of what the numbers are like, because they've cancelled everything else. So I don't think, you know, if this is cancelled, there's a fair, that, I mean, there is no way that Jessica Jones is going to survive another season either. Punisher is the one thing that could possibly survive on its own on Netflix without needing the support of everybody else, but I strongly suspect that they are going to cancel it, and it's unlikely to pop up anywhere other than, well, you can move it to Hulu maybe, where Disney have got like a large stake in Hulu, but it's not going to move to the Disney Plus service because that's a PG-13, and there is no way you can make the Punisher a PG-13 and still have it work. So this may be the final season of it, but worth watching, definitely. I'm really enjoying it. John Bernthal is amazing in that role, so very, very well worth going to watch. On a slightly lighter note, the other thing this week, Magnum PI started, which is a reboot of a show that I loved as a kid. And it's great, you know, the world's greatest acting moustache that happens to be attached to the face of Tom Selleck for the original.
What kind of tone have they gone for this? Because, like, whenever they reboot things that are police-based, they either do what they did for The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and forget it was a comedy and make it serious, or go the other way, like they did with, I've forgotten the name, the other one they made a film out of and went the other way and made a serious one into a comedy.
If you've ever seen an episode of Hawaii Five-O, the TV remake, the more recent one, it's Hawaii Five-O. It's exactly, I mean, it is actually plays like a spin-off almost of Hawaii Five-O, and it's in the same universe. There are going to be crossover episodes. It's by the same producers. If you like Hawaii Five-O, you'll probably like Magnum. It's really just an extension of that whole universe. The characters are perfectly likable. I like the guy that plays Magnum. There is potential for some kind of good banter buddy cop things going on between the little group that he has around him, but to all intents and purposes it is basically an extension of that universe, and it's exactly what you expect. If you've ever seen an episode of Hawaii Five-O, you know exactly what you're going to get with Magnum. It's
is that like early Hawaii Five-O or later Hawaii Five-O?
It opens,
or somewhere in between.
It's somewhere in between, although it does open with him, well, kind of opens with him doing a jump from space. You know, the world's highest free fall that the guy did. It's basically them recreating that, and that's sort of the opening scene, which has been in some
of
the trailers.
That sounds like a perfectly sensible place to start a cop drama. Yeah, I don't know why they don't all do that.
That is explained as not necessarily how it happened. There is an explanation for why they show that at the start, and it isn't necessarily true. But it's a nice sort of opening bit that they can throw in. But it's fine. It's silly. It's fun. It's entertaining. It's a Hawaii Five-O with a private investigator instead of the Five-O task force. I mean, that's basically what it is. The other thing I watched was The Passage, which is this Mark Paul Gosselier new drama. It's okay. It's interesting. It's basically about him being ex-army. He's an agent that works for this secretive group that are trying to solve this potential medical crisis. The moment they're experimenting on criminals and people who are volunteers that are serving life sentences, they work out that the reason that their treatment isn't working, effectively what it's doing is it's turning them into vampires, essentially, or zombies, or some sort of vampire zombie hybrid.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, I know, terrible. They realise that people are lasting longer before they turn the younger they are, so they decide what they need to do to stop this crisis is use a child. So they send the agent, of which Mark Paul Gosselaar's character is, to go out and basically take a child who won't be missed. So it's a child from a group home. He goes to get her, realizes that something isn't quite right, and ends up absconding with the child. So that's sort of the premise of it. I mean, it's interesting. I'm intrigued to see where it goes. I think it's based on quite a popular book. So, yeah, intriguing. It's on Fox. So, we're worth catching, though, and seeing what you think. But, yeah, interesting premise for a TV show, I think. And it's very difficult to judge on sort of one episode exactly where they're going to go with it. But it has that sort of sci-fi-esque dystopian future element to it. So, you know.
We'll things that tick my boxes on it. So, I should probably check it out and see where it actually goes.
Yeah, but it's called The Passage. It's running on Fox. First episode will be on Catch Up if you want to go and check that. That's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news. So TV and film news this week, we kick off with the renewals, cancellations and pickups as usual. First one, the Sean Penn space drama The First won't be back for a second season because that has been dropped by Hulu. And to be honest, I wasn't even entirely convinced they were going to make a second season of this. It has all the hallmarks of a limited series when they put this together. I mean, it was kind of with a self-contained story because it's about the people being selected as the first people to go on a mission to Mars. It's all sort of all set before they actually leave on the mission to Mars, basically, and it's about that whole selection process and stuff. Ran on Channel 4 over here, so I'm not overly bothered that that doesn't come back because it worked quite well as a self-contained thing. So, you know, I enjoyed it, but I'm not overly concerned it's not back. The horror anthology series Channel Zero, that's been cancelled by Sci-Fi after 3 seasons. Gina Torres' Suits spin-off has got a title. It's going to be called Imaginatively Pearson, after Jessica Pearson, the character she played in Suits. So that's coming. Don't know whether that's going to be picked up in the UK. Hopefully, if it is, it'll be picked up by Netflix, because there is potential that they may want to cross that over with Suits, and that's going to be a nightmare if somebody else picks it up.
Yeah, it could be good, but it's not the spin-off I wanted.
Which one was the spin-off you wanted?
Louis.
Do you want a Louis spin-off?
That's the spin-off I wanted. I wanted to sort of jump back in time a little bit to when he was with that the lady, I can't remember her name, with the blonde hair and the glasses.
Yes.
I want them to sort of like take a temporary imaginary time loop holiday and set up a little private investigator business together or something. It would be them and their cats solving crimes and being sarcastic.
Yeah, I could watch him all day. He's absolutely fabulous.
That's the one. But I guess they can't remove him from Suits.
No.
But a mini series just about him would be amazing.
Yes.
Because he's the character, you hate him so much when you start watching Suits.
Yeah.
And then eventually you start to realise that
he's fabulous.
He's actually quite awesome. And a lot of the time he's trying to do his job properly, but he's surrounded by people that are playing games and lying and manipulating. And he's sort of trying to manipulate people in the way everyone else is doing. And he just isn't as good at it.
Yeah.
And he's sick of everyone. But then you start to see why he's sick of everyone.
Yeah.
And he gets so much more relatable as it goes on. I mean, none of them are particularly wonderfully nice characters. They're all incredibly selfish people. But he becomes a character that becomes so watchable as it goes on. I want a spin-off or a mini spin-off of him.
I would totally watch the heck out of that, but
we'll shout it loud enough and they'll hear us and then
but I mean, I love Gina Torres anyway, and Jessica Pearson was a great character, and this is basically, if you watched the finale of the last season of Suits, you've kind of seen the pilot episode, because the finale of last season of Suits was basically the pilot for Pearson. So you know the sort of thing you're going to get. It's Jessica in Chicago dealing with Chicago politics rather than it being a straight spin-off law thing with her setting up a new law firm. It's not that.
It allows them to kind of run it alongside, and occasionally people can turn up just for one episode.
Yeah. There will be
she can call on people for help when she needs them, and when the timing, filming and budget constraints allow, sort of like the other people to just sort of show up occasionally for an episode. I'd be interested to see if it works just as a straight up standalone or if it just comes across as a spin-off, because it is quite difficult to spin something off like that. Although saying that, I mean, the best example I can think of a spin-off randomly is Angel.
Yeah, well, yes, that was arguably better than Buffy towards the end of it.
It ended up with a separate fan base almost, that managed to completely find its own feet and do that. So it is possible, but it's quite rare to see something be that successful at it.
Yeah. So we'll see. But I'm quite looking forward to that. I think that could be quite interesting. Hopefully, like I say, Netflix will pick it up over here, but we don't know yet. Channel 4 has renewed Stathlet's Flats for a second season. I know Grey is a huge fan of this, but I haven't seen a single episode of it, so I've no idea whether it's any good or not. Netflix Texas renewed Grayson Frankie for a sixth season before the fifth season has even aired, which I don't think is a great surprise to anybody because it's been award kind of nominated across the board. So I'm very happy for that to be back. Another little bit of news that dropped over the weekend as well. Gillian Anderson is set to play Margaret Thatcher in The Crown season 4, apparently, which is an interesting bit of casting, I thought. So, yeah, I can sort of see that, maybe.
The first thought I had was it's going to sound strange. Not as in, so she's going to have to do
the accent.
Such a different voice and accent because her way of speaking is very, very distinctive.
Yeah.
So it's going to be strange seeing her face with what must have to sound like not her voice coming out of it.
So that's going to be interesting. But great actress, a very, very interesting character to play. So we'll see how that goes. Moving on to some other bigger news stories. This one came very much out of left field because I don't think anybody was expecting it. Jason Reitman, son of the original Ghostbusters director Ivan Reitman, is going to direct another installment of the Ghostbusters franchise, which is more of a direct sequel to the original two movies. It has nothing to do with the female-led Paul Feige 2016 reboot. So it's going to be set in the original world that was saved by the original Ghostbusters team of Venkman, Stans, Spengler, and Winston Zeddemore. So it's essentially it's Ghostbusters 3, which they've been talking about for a while. There are rumours flying around that it maybe will have a young, possibly teen cast, which slightly bothers me. But yeah, I mean, it does mean that you can rope some of the older guys into that world. I'm not convinced you'll get Bill Murray to do it. Maybe you might get him to pop in. Dan Aykroyd, I'm sure, will be perfectly happy. Harold Ramis, unfortunately, passed away. Ernie Hudson, I'm sure you get to pop up as well. So, I don't know. Jason had sort of said, I always thought of myself as the first Ghostbusters fan when I was 6 years old on a set visit. I wanted to make a movie for all the other fans. This is the next chapter of the original franchise. It's not a reboot. What happened in the 80s happened in the 80s. This is all set in present day.
Until you said it might have a teenage cast. Yeah. I've been going along the thinking of, well, it couldn't possibly be worse than the reboot, which had probably about 20 minutes of content I enjoyed and the rest of it I just wanted it to go away. I think the only way it could be worse for me than the 2016 one is if it does have a teenage cast and they make it into the equivalent of the Gem and the Holograms reboot that got made.
Right, okay.
That's the only way it could be worse, I think. I mean, he loves the films, why not? If someone else can have another go at it and we'll see what happens.
I think if you get some of the original cast in to do it, I mean, the one thing Bill Murray had always said is he wouldn't come back and play Venkman unless he could come back and play Venkman as a ghost, which I always thought was a great idea. So there is that. And if you could get maybe the other two coming back, if you could get Ernie Hudson and Dan Aykroyd to maybe come back and maybe have them as the sort of older generation deciding that they're too old to do it and handing off to a younger group, possibly, that may work.
There's various ways you could do it, because I thought this when the 2016 one came out, I was like, well, you could have easily made it that it's been long enough since the Ghostbusters saved everything that they've become like comic book characters, and you know, they're people that people dress up as for parties and things.
Yeah.
And they're not taken seriously anymore, and then something else happens and some people want to take up the mantle, like it could have been younger relatives or people that were fans of them or something, or people like, I thought it would make sense for the reboot if the people that became the new Ghostbusters had been people, say, who'd been the kids affected by the ghosts in the original movies.
Yeah.
You could have easily written it to work as an evolution that way and tied it in. So maybe they will do something like this with this, because all the kind of like when you had the mass, you know, half the city was like covered in ghosts bit of plots in the previous movies. Easily you could just be like, this is someone who you saw this child in this scene being scared by a ghost. Oh, that's this person here. They remember that, and the whole of their life, all they wanted to do was be a Ghostbuster, and this is their chance.
Yeah, so yeah,
and you can do it.
Yeah, I think there is definitely some potential for that there. So we'll have to see what they come up with. But I like the fact that you've got a legacy directing it. You know, you've Jason Reitman, he's somebody who's obviously a huge fan of the franchise. She probably knows it better than anybody. So I think that's absolutely fine. He has directed one of my favorite movies of all time, which is Juno, which with Ellen Page and Michael Cera, which is hilarious and just one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. So I'm very happy to have him behind this.
Gino's slightly drier comedy, right? Because I've not actually seen it myself, but I've heard a lot of good things.
Yeah, it is. It's I love the sarcasm from Ellen Page's character in that. He's just wonderful. So
so that's a good sign, because that's the sort of humour that Ghostbusters is supposed to be, and that's one of the things I felt was missing.
Yeah.
From the reboot that just made it, I felt the reboot was more Scooby-Doo.
Right. Okay. I've never watched the reboot. It really didn't.
It really isn't very good.
Yeah, I've heard
that. A lot of the jokes just do not land. You can see why. I mean, some bits are funny, but the whole film is not consistently funny. The thing I thought was the best thing about the entire film, which is a really sad thing to say, is that it's filmed in like a very much widescreen. So you have letterboxing on your TV, even if you've got a widescreen telly.
Yeah.
Whenever there would be a thing that was in 3D in the cinema, like the proton beams coming out the packs, whenever those are coming towards the audience, they've made it so those go over the letterboxing effect.
Ah, interesting.
And I thought that was a really interesting way of trying to give something of a slightly 3D experience and use that otherwise wasted letterboxing space, because if people did have a super widescreen TV, it wouldn't detract.
Yeah.
But for anyone with a normal widescreen TV, you had this extra thing, and that kind of gave it an extra dimension.
Interesting.
Unfortunately, you can't really watch an entire film just because every now and again there's a slightly cool effect with the letterboxing. But that was honestly the best thing I remember about it.
Which is, that's not a good sign, is it really?
Yeah, and it had Thor in it, you know? It has Thor in it, and still I think the best thing was a way of utilising the 3D effect.
Yes, not convincing me to want to go and spend 2.5 hours watching it.
I watched it so other people don't have to.
Yes.
And I watched it because I didn't want to judge it without having watched it, and then I just wanted that time back.
Yeah.
It's so Scooby-Doo.
Oh, it's
so ridiculously just... It's exactly that type of plotline that just winds me up. There was only one character I liked out of the main cast.
Yes. I'm quite glad I haven't seen the rest of it now, so I won't be going to watch that. But this I'm quite interested in.
They've got a teaser up, but it doesn't give away
anything.
It's because they wanted to put something up rather than they had any content.
It's basically the camera flying into a sort of dilapidated barn, and you see the back of the Ghostbuster mobile, whatever it's called,
under a tarpaulin.
Echo One. You see it under a tarpauling, and the tarpauling kind of flips up and you see the number plate and stuff. So I think this is interesting. It's got an interesting guy attached to it. There's a good chance that they can probably convince the original cast to come back, or some of the original cast that are still around to come back. So there is potential for a handoff there, and it could work. We'll have to wait to see what they come up with. Moving on, Matthew Rhys has landed a new role. He of the Americans fame. He's landed a new role in HBO's new Perry Mason series, which is apparently going to be a limited series, so that sort of says it's potentially only going to be like 8 episodes or something. Perry Mason's a character, if you're not aware, has been around for a very, very, very long time. He's a private investigator / lawyer. What's interesting about this is, I mean, it was an old TV show. It was first around in 1957. It was sort of part detective show, part courtroom drama. So the first half of the show sort of followed Perry Mason along with his PI and his secretary investigating crimes, and then when the client was accused, the second half was sort of a courtroom drama bit. So it was sort of an interesting setup. They've remade it, and in the 70s as well, they've done sort of TV movies. I think it was a radio show as well. So there's lots of different versions. What's kind of interesting about this version is they've, rather than trying to do what they do with Hawaii Five-0 and stuff and move everything into the future, they're actually leaving it set in 1932, Los Angeles.
Okay.
It's in a country which is recovering from the Great Depression, but LA itself is actually doing fairly well. You've got the Olympics arriving around that sort of time. Talking pictures are about to sort of start to take off. So it's a very kind of buzzy city around that time.
Yeah, I think the fact they're setting it in that time period is the only reason I don't think it's just going to be an in-name only. There was just a license that it's a known name, so they bought it, but actually it's unrelated. The fact they're actually setting it in that time is the only thing that gives me a reason to think there's any point to it actually being a reboot or whatever it is of that franchise. I keep wondering what they're going to make next. Like, are we going to get, I'd say Murder, She Wrote, but we had Castle, which was basically Murder, She Wrote. What are we going to get next? It would be like Diagnosis Murder. Is that going to come back?
I don't know. Well, you see, the obvious one for me is the A-Team out of those sort of 80s TV shows.
The A-Team would have been amazing because the film, I was really sad we didn't get more of the films because I really liked the A-Team film.
Yeah, I thought the A-Team film was perfectly fine. You know, I quite enjoyed it.
I thought it was good. I don't know if it's a licensing thing, because if the licensing's owned for the films and if they were going to do more with that, maybe that's stopping it. And it would be quite a high budget TV show could still do it. I don't know. I'm waiting for like Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman to get rebooted or something. Yeah, it's just we're running out of the good ones now.
Yeah,
or they can't do the good ones. It's going to start getting thin on the ground. We're going to get a Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman reboot whether we want it or not, aren't we?
Probably. Well, I think CBS are just going through a catalogue of things with cool theme tunes, which A-Team fits in perfectly well. You know,
things with cool theme tunes, but they have to cost less than a fiver. Seems to be the prerequisite, which is why we haven't got the A-Team.
Yes, maybe that's it. And you can't set the A-Team in Hawaii. That's the problem. Well, you could, I guess, but it's kind of limited.
You could set it anywhere. They just run away, but this time they've got the intelligence to run away somewhere really nice and warm.
Yeah, maybe. So, I don't know. I mean, this does sound like it could be quite interesting. For a start, it's HBO doing it, so you know it's going to have a budget. The idea that they're setting it in 1930s, I think, is quite interesting. Matthew Rhys is a great actor. I think he's a really interesting choice for it. The team behind it is actually Robert Downey Jr.'s Team Downey, because he originally bought the license with the premise of making it a film with him starring in it.
Okay.
And then HBO got involved and it sort of morphed into a TV project, and he decided he wasn't going to do it with him starring it and as a TV project. Nick Palazzio, who did True Detective, was originally attached as writer. He then left, so this new iteration comes from a duo of Rolin Jones, who has done things like Boardwalk Empire, Weeds and Life in Pieces, and Ron Fitzgerald, who has done Weeds and Westworld. They're going to sort of exec produce and write and serve as showrunners. So sort of an interesting mix of people behind it. I don't know. It's an interesting one for HBO because they don't do procedurally things very much. And the fact that they're billing it as a limited series,
I'd argue it's probably not going to be procedural. It's probably going to be a single case that takes up the entire run.
I would have thought that will probably be the case, but it's interesting. I'm intrigued to see what they do with it, because it's, bearing in mind the source material was very procedural, I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to see what they come up with. And lastly, the news that Netflix have announced a new TV show called Space Force from The Office's Steve Carell and Greg Daniels. So those are the people that were behind the US remake of The Office. The basic premise for it is, you remember a few months ago, the Trump administration announced they were creating a sixth division of the armed forces called Space Force, which is to defend satellites from attack, perform other space-related tasks, or something, as the trailer for this put it. Space Force, the TV show, is the story of the men and women who have to figure out what Space Force is and does, basically. It's going to star Steve Carell in the lead role. He's co-created it with Greg Daniels, who is going to exec produce and be showrunner. It sounds like it's going to be sort of the Office workplace type thing, but based around a NASA Space Force military type agency. I mean, I have no idea whether this is going to be any good or not, but it's a really interesting idea. It sounds funny. It's a wonderful bit of trolling of the Trump administration.
I would be quite worried if I were working on this, I have to say, because you are trolling not just something political in their own country, but something currently going on. I'm unused to seeing things on major channels, streaming services, being so quick to put up something that's presumably going to be satirical and highly damning of something currently going on in the political landscape.
But having said that, there is a very good chance that Space Force as an initiative is never going to see the light of day. So, I don't know.
What if it does?
Well, if it does,
if it does and things in this show are really close to what happens in reality? It'll be like in The Simpsons where they predict something as a joke and then it happens.
But then it's, look at Veep or The Thick of It, you know, or even things going back to as far as Yes, Prime Minister, which you know, they said was scarily accurate to how Parliament works. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a long tradition of this sort of stuff of poking fun of administrations. And admittedly, this is poking fun at a specific policy.
Current policy. And,
yeah. So
I've not seen The American Office, so that leaves me without...
I've seen a few episodes of it. It's much beloved around the world. So, I mean, yeah. I think this is going to be interesting to see where they go with it. But they've not set an air date for it yet. It's just coming soon to Netflix. So we'll see how it goes. But that's one to look out for. It's going to be called Space Force. And that's it for the news for this week. Next, we have an interview.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The interview this week is with the Just Us League. This is the comedy duo of Gary and Javier. They have a new show which he's touring right now called the Marvel Us, unofficial Marvel parody show. They had a standing room only season at the Edinburgh Fringe last year. They're now touring the show around the UK. They also had a critically acclaimed tour of Australia as well. They are returning with this new show which basically takes all 10 years of the Marvel movies and squeezes them all into 1 hour of comedy. So they're using their signature high energy style to create short, punchy scenes, and they squeeze a decade of the Marvel Cinematic Universe into 1 hour of action-packed comedy. It's touring across the UK right now. If you want to find out more about it, you can go to the justusleague.co.uk to find tickets. But here are Gary and Javier to talk a little bit more about the show and what you can expect.
Hi guys, we are the Justice League. I am Gary.
Yeah, I am Javier.
Javier is the New Zealand one.
I am the Kiwi, so the Antipodean accent you can hear, that is Javier.
Yeah, and the dulcet, slightly West Country tones, Gary.
Where did the pair of you meet? Because clearly you're from two very different places. So.
Yeah.
We met doing a road trip to Nottingham.
Nottingham, woo!
Yeah. We're both stand-ups, so we were doing a gig together, and there was a driver from London, and that's how we met.
We both lived in London.
Yeah.
Both lived in London, but we met, in a car journey on the way to a comedy club in Nottingham.
Mm. Cool. And the show you're doing is called Marvel Us, the unofficial Marvel parody, and you're touring that now. So where did the idea for that come from?
Well, we're massive Marvel nerds, and we'd go to watch the movies together. And one Edinburgh, I think it was Edinburgh 2016. We were both there kind of like flyering for our individual shows. And it was, it's a hard day flyering. And we saw this queue around the block for this other venue. And we were like, what's that show? And we went and asked some of them in the queue. We said, what's this show about? And they said, oh, it's an improvised Doctor Who show.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh.
And we were there, while solo shows, we were performing to a handful of people each.
Yeah, this place is selling out. We said, it's a Doctor Who show. We said, all right, who's putting it on? And they said, we don't know. It's just a Doctor Who show. And
we don't care.
And we were sitting there going, what we need is a fan base existing that we are big fans of. And we were racking our brains. And we were like, okay, we'll think about it after we go watch this latest Marvel film.
Then we'll nail down what it's going to be.
Yeah, but in the meantime, I am so excited for X.
Exactly. What was it? What would it have been? 2016?
2016, what would it have been? Maybe something like Civil War.
Guardians 2, Civil War?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably Civil War.
And then Yeah, and then it just came so easily. It was brilliant.
We were kind of surprised no one had done it before, because we suddenly came up with this idea of, like, what if we did a comedy show with, you know, about the MCU?
Well, about Marvel, or
yeah, all the movies in an hour. And we were like, surely someone's done that. It's right there. And one had.
No, we were the first onto it.
Yeah, it's crazy nobody's done it before. They've done things like Star Wars and that sort of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so, and I think it's worth pointing out that our show is slightly different than the one-man Star Wars, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Because, well, when we started out, we were like, okay, well, what we're going to do is we are just going to reenact every film in the space of an hour.
Yeah, so we'll do Iron Man in 5 minutes. We'll do Captain America in 5 minutes. We'll do all the big ones, you know, shrink it down, do all the storylines. And when we did Iron Man, what we found is no one really cares about recreation. And maybe it was because, you know, we were recreating a movie that was already at that time, like 7 years old or whatever. Yeah. No one could really remember the intricacies because we went back and rewatched
everything. And we're like, hey, remember this line of dialogue? And everyone's like, no, I haven't filmed in 7 years.
So what we started doing is taking the funniest bits out of these bits and just making them sketches based on each movie. So kind of each movie has a sketch that kind of encapsulates what we think
the movie is about.
Was it movies about, or a very funny point in the movie, or, well, you know, things that we can make fun of about the movie. But it's all come from a place of loving the movies. Like, we're not there dissing the movies.
We're not being snide. We're not being condescending.
We're not punching down. Like, we're making...
It's a labor of love.
Yeah.
Absolutely a labor of love.
Yeah.
Have you seen the new Spider-Man trailer yet?
Yes. Yeah. I really like the look of it. It's going to be very interesting. They seem to be implying that it takes place immediately after the events of the... next movie of Endgame.
Yeah, Kevin Feige has clarified that. He's specifically said that the events take place after Endgame.
I heard a fan theory, which I think is really good actually, is that the bus that Parker is on, have you heard this? The bus that he's on in
Infinity War
is the bus taking them to Europe.
Yes.
So in fact, what's going to happen at Endgame?
Probably
is
to the airport.
Yeah. So you're going to drive across the Pacific or Atlantic. So I love that theory. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. I can't wait for Spider-Man to come and fix Britain. It's just, we need it. We need it now more than ever.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not even sure Spider-Man can fix Britain at this point.
Just a sign of him protesting Brexit or something.
Yeah. But have you had any reaction from, or would you like some reaction from people within the MCU of, obviously not a cease and desist notice, but...
We would love a cease and desist. The publicity.
If you could make us get sued. Oh, amazing.
Disney have no idea we exist.
If we could be the ant that is pushing against the giant Disney boot, we would love that, to get any sort of
recognition,
get on their radar.
We haven't had anything from cast members or anything. We except for, we were talking about this earlier,
Daryl,
the Australian housemate of Thor.
Right. Yeah.
We were touring Australia with the show earlier in the year, and we gave him a bit of a shout out to be like, hey, can you give us a retweet? And he did, bless him. It's like, go watch this, it'll be really fun.
Truly Daryl level of anticlimax. Like, g'day mate, can you retweet this? Yeah, all right.
And he just did.
And he did. And that's the end of the story.
Awesome. Yeah. So with the show, obviously you've been spending hours honing it and getting it right. When you're actually doing it, is there actually much improv involved in the show, or is it all planned?
This is a scripted show, but we do...
We don't have a lot of self-discipline.
Yeah, we go off script.
Yeah, we can go
off script a lot.
Yeah.
And it really comes down to how the audience is feeling. Like, sometimes you'll get like real mega fans, which we love. Like, you know, the thing we love most is when fans come up to us afterwards and just go, that was a show for the fans. Yeah. It really is. But yeah, we go off script a lot.
We don't have a lot of self-discipline. Our background is in improv.
Yeah.
So
that's how we started out as a double act.
And in fact, we've come up with a new show called Improvengers Assemble, which is an improvised Marvel movie.
Yeah.
Which we're taking to a few festivals and stuff.
Mm. Oh, cool. That sounds great as well.
We're going to be in Leicester Comedy Festival with that, actually, which that's not a million miles from you, is it?
No, not a million miles from me.
There's a big Marvel live show touring quite soon, isn't there? Have you seen that? What's it called? It's like, I can't think what it's called.
I've seen the trailer for it and they use a lot of background projection.
And it's like this real, because we've got no budget. We're kind of doing everything on Fringe and it's very, we make it funny, but we've got no, and then Marvel are touring this massive show with live action. Super, and I feel like suing them. You have stolen our thing. How dare you? Exactly.
Sort of follow them round as they tour.
Do the warm up act for them.
Couldn't afford the real show?
Do it in the studio venue. The studio theatre of the venue.
Yes.
Get the one off.
Exactly.
So when you're doing the show, are there any particular MCU kind of bits or characters that you like playing particularly?
Oh, like a lot of the sketches are really fun to do. And we've kind of got the characters that we play. I don't think we ever switched
characters. We don't ever switch characters. At the moment, I'm always Iron Man.
You're always Iron Man. I'm always Captain America. I'm Hawkeye. You're Thor.
I'm Hulk.
Yes, you are Hulk. I'm Loki.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got it. But we did do one show, because we've done the show so often, one show in Australia.
And your voice went.
My voice is about to go because I'm not trained. And so the voice goes. And just before we went to go on stage, Gary was like, should we just switch roles today?
Because he half had a lot of the talking stuff.
Right.
He's more disciplined with the talky stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, look, I think I know your part well enough. Let's swap roles and I'll do your bit and you do my bit.
That was really fun.
That's probably the most fun we've had, guessing each other's parts.
Yeah.
What's your favourite film to do? I always like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians is fun. I like doing Civil War.
Civil War's fun.
Thor is fun.
Doctor Strange is really fun.
Yeah. Black Panther
is fun.
we just like doing them all.
Yeah.
Captain America.
Star Spangled Man.
Star Spangled Man is one of my favourites.
We're trying not to say punchlines. That's the problem here.
Yeah.
Like, we're like, oh, that's fun, but we can't say why.
Yeah. Right, yes, of course.
You look a bit like Mark Ruffalo.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you.
You do. You look a bit like Mark Ruffalo.
I will definitely take that as a compliment. He's a very attractive man. regardless of the characters you like to play on stage, do you have a particular favourite Marvel character each?
Spider-Man, hands down favourite. He's been my favourite character for years.
I think it's a toss up between Iron Man and Captain America for me.
Boring.
I love Civil War so hard. That's my favourite one, and I just love how they're both two old friends, and you can see how they're both coming at it from different angles. They're both very... My wife loves Iron Man. That's her favourite, so I'm thinking I'm going to have to go for Cap. He's so dreamy. He's got the old school fashion values in a modern world.
Yeah, he is dreamy.
What's not to like?
I also really like Star-Lord, but this just makes me sound like I have the taste of a teenage girl. Spider-Man and Star-Lord. I don't mind.
Nothing wrong with that.
What's your favourite Marvel film?
I have to say Infinity War, probably. I rewatched a bunch of them recently, actually. Mm-hmm. Just sort of going through, kind of in order of like the last phase. Yeah, that Infinity War movie is brilliant.
It's insane. What I said, as soon as I watched that and I came out and I was like, that was just so well done. Mm. If I had to write that film, I wouldn't know where to start. But they balanced it. Perfectly.
Really felt like, you know, when you're reading graphic novels and it's a big crossover event, it felt like it had the same pacing as a big...
It was done better than a lot of titles. It's like Age of Apocalypse or Civil War.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I love how they rejigged all the teams. Like, okay, Thor, you're going to be teaming up with Groot and Rocket. Black Panther, you're with Winter Soldier. I love
it. Yeah.
All the changing ups.
Yeah, I thought they did such a good job. And just the balance of, like you say, perfectly balanced as things should be, to quote Thanos.
Hey, very good. And Thanos was incredible. Incredible.
There's a
character.
Big argument that the Infinity War is a Thanos movie.
Yeah. And what they did amazing well is there are times in the movie where you go, I think Thanos has a point.
It's not wrong here.
He's got a point here.
It is a Thanos movie, and it is that issue of the guy's not wrong, although I'm not entirely sure I agree with genocide as a solution.
No, absolutely. But he was an incredibly well-balanced character.
Yeah.
Brolin did an amazing job.
Considering he was, like, shooting Cable pretty much.
Yeah.
Cable too.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much overlapping.
I hope. I really hope Deadpool makes his way into the MCU. Do I hope that? Do I hope that? We want the X-Men and Deadpool? I want the X-Men
and the Fantastic Four. They talk about
no them. One wants the Fantastic Four no anywhere. One wants Fantastic no Four. One cares about the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, I would like, certainly I would like the X-Men to make an appearance. Possibly not the setup they've got at the moment. I think you could have a
hard time. It's a dog's breakfast. They just need to lit. They need to take
breakfast.
It's a dog's breakfast. Like, they need to take that franchise out the back and just like look up at the sky, boy, and just
smell the flowers, boy.
You go into the doggy heaven,
yeah,
and just start again.
Yeah, it's such a shame that we'll never get to see Hugh Jackman fit into, because I think that would have been amazing.
Never say never, my friend. Yeah, say never.
I bet you if they shoved a script in his face where Wolverine sings, he'd be in there like.
You're not wrong.
And here's where Logan sings about his feelings.
Sure, he'll do that.
Like, hell yeah, straight hit, mate.
Absolutely.
Love it. Yeah, 10 years from now, X-Men the musical on stage. I could see him totally doing that.
And we will be there pastiching that as well.
Yeah.
maybe that's the next thing. Maybe you do a musical.
You haven't heard us sing, dude. That is. Sorry, I should say you haven't heard Harv sing. I've got the voice of an angel.
Okay, there you go. Oh dear. So the tour is starting. Well, by the time this goes out, you will have, because we go out on Tuesday. So you will have started the tour.
In that case, London was phenomenal.
Oh my god,
it was amazing. Whoa. We smashed it.
So you're all over the country. I noticed Bath, Birmingham, other places as well.
Sudbury,
Stamford,
Hemel Hempstead.
Yeah. All the big ones.
Yeah. So you'll be able to go and see it. It's called Marvelous, the unofficial Marvel parody show. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so people need to go and look out for that.
Oh, they can find tickets on www.thejustusleague.co.uk.
Yes, go find your tickets there. A couple of final questions. First question, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Just wrapped up Titans, which was brilliant.
Interesting.
I mean, awful. Whatever you think, mate.
It was good. It was good. It was just a bit of a mess, I thought. I thought plotting-wise, it was like...
It turned into a bit of a road movie.
It's the thing of they have this kind of through story and then an episode suddenly stops and you get an entire episode of backstory for a character and then it tries to move forward again and it's just a bit all over the place.
That's the classic move, though. Whenever a series is going really well, it's like, oh, the story's going this way and you can't wait to see what happens. And then they go, okay, let's do a little backstory.
Yeah, backstab.
Yeah,
story on one character,
origin of this character.
Backstory. Yeah, I think the idea's great, the setup's great. I like the world that they're in. I like the actors. So overall, it's good. But I think there was a few plotting problems for me that I wanted it a bit. I sort of almost wanted them together at the start. You know, as that team of Titans, and then going back to do the backstory afterwards, that's fine. But I wanted them to sort of start together rather than having the whole thing about them building the team, you know.
Fair enough.
So, but yes, I did like it. I did.
I really liked how tonally consistent they were.
Yeah.
Like, it was the same tone the whole way through.
Yeah.
Not necessarily pitch, but yeah, definitely the same tone.
Yeah.
How about you, Harv? What are you watching?
I have just wrapped up the 8th and final season of Voltron Legendary Defender on Netflix, which I'm finding very hard to kind of find anyone to empathize with, because Voltron wasn't a thing in the UK.
Nah, not at all.
No.
It wasn't a thing. Like, and hearing you guys say that so coldly hurts me, because it was a massive part of my childhood. And anyone in the US and anyone in New Zealand, maybe Australia, Voltron was just the coolest. It was the first show that had...
Yeah, I don't care, mate.
Robots that formed, you know, combined to form a bigger robot.
Anyway. Yeah, Power Rangers. You mean Power Rangers?
Shut up.
You mean the Dinobots? Is that what you mean?
They don't even combine.
I swear the Dinobots don't combine. You're right. They took down. There was Transformers that combined.
Because in the animated.
The what?
Gestalts is the name of the groups.
And there was like a Digger and.
There's a Constructicons.
Constructicons.
They called Devastator.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Anyway,
that's what you mean.
Anyway, hijacker. Like, if anyone watched Voltron as a kid, watch Voltron Legendary Defender. They've updated the series. They've made it slick, and it's got its own lore. It digs deeper into it, and it's just incredible. I watched the first few episodes just to get a little bit of a nostalgia hit, and then I found myself just, like, glued to it, just next episode, next episode, next episode. It's great.
Do tweet Harv to talk about it, because he needs people to talk. He keeps trying to talk to me about it.
Stop trying to make Voltron happen. Yeah, it's not going to happen.
there are definitely fans of Voltron out there.
The only reason I remember it is from comic books, and there used to be adverts for it, American comic books.
Right, yeah, yeah.
For it. That's the only reason I know about it.
Yeah, there are definitely is a UK fan base out there. And last question: if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present, or future, which show would it be?
Oh, excellent question. Dawson's Creek. I don't want to wait for my life. Yeah, Dawson's Creek. That, I love that. I don't care. I'm not even joking. Dawson's Creek. I love that show.
Don't know what you're talking about, mate. We didn't get it.
All the kids from the creek would combine, right, and become one giant teenager.
X-Men animated series.
Oh, strong.
Yeah.
The X-Men animated series.
What would you have done?
Good.
I just made him keep going. And make Wolverine actually stab someone.
Yes.
I rewatched it. It's like, it's amazing how much they can make Wolverine just like pull out the claws and do nothing else.
Yeah. damn those kind of animation rules. They're not allowed to.
Yeah, exactly. Comic books authority. Yeah.
Just throw some more robots at him that he can chew up.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the old episodes of the A-Team where a car used to, like, do 20 rolls and then you'd see the people get up and go, woo, and just dust themselves off.
Nobody was allowed to die.
Yeah, nobody was allowed to die. Awesome. Well, thank you for spending a little bit of time to talk. I'm looking forward to seeing the show at some point. It sounds great.
When are you coming? Do you know which city is nearest to you?
It will be Birmingham, I would think.
Oh, sweet. Brilliant.
So, yes, I will try and get along to the Birmingham one. That's the Glee Club in Birmingham, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Yes, I will try and get along to that one.
Awesome.
Nice.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's been a pleasure, mate.
Yeah,
really nice talking to you, buddy.
Been lovely talking to you. I'll talk to you soon. Cheers.
Bye.
That was the interview with the Just Us League. If you want to find out more information about that, go to thejustusleague.co.uk. You can go and find tickets, find where they're touring. It looks really funny. They're all over the UK, so I'm sure you'll find somewhere nearby. So go and check that out. Next up, we have some highlights for next week on TV. So highlights for next week on TV, we have starting off the Frankie Drake Mysteries, which is back for its second season on Alibi, 22nd January at 9 p.m. This is the spin-off from the Murdoch Mysteries, first female private investigator solving crimes in 1920s Toronto. I've not seen any of the Murdoch Mysteries or the Frankie Drake Mysteries, so I have no idea whether that's any good, but it's there if you want to go and watch it. Future Man Season 2 coming to Sci-Fi UK on the 23rd of January at 2 a.m. and then they repeat it later on in the evening. This was really funny, the first season of this. It's a wonderful, silly sci-fi comedy, well worth going to watch. It's about a janitor who gets mysterious visitors who travel through time in order to prevent the extinction of humanity, and he, this sort of janitor by day, gamer by night, is the only person that can save them. But well worth going to look up that if you've not seen Future Man. It's definitely worth watching. Suits Season 8, second half of Season 8, is coming back on the 24th of January on Netflix. Yes, thoroughly enjoy that show, so well worth coming back to that. Tin Star Season 2, that's on Sky Atlantic on the 24th of January at 9 p.m. Loved the first season of this. Tim Roth and Christina Hendricks in a sort of revenge thriller set in the Rocky Mountains, produced by Kudos. It's a really great show, well worth going to look at if you've missed the first season of that. Broad City Season 5 of that coming on the 25th of January at 11 p.m. to Comedy Central. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, the second half of Season 4 of that coming on the 25th of January. Bob's Burgers Season 9 coming to Comedy Central on the 25th of January at 10 p.m. Black Lightning returns to the second half of that Season 2. That's on the 28th of January. That's the first of the CW shows coming back. If you're wondering about the others, Flash looks like it's returning the end of February. Seems that Arrow might not be back until April, which is a bit weird.
Yeah, because normally they like to have enough of a crossover in what's going on in them to, and they won't be able to do that if they stagger the release by that much.
Yeah, so whether there's just no reason to keep them together and they're going to space them out, my guess is maybe Flash and Supergirl are coming back together, and then they're going to bring Arrow back with Legends, because Legends doesn't come back in America until much later. He's not back until April in America, so maybe they're going to run them to 2 and 2, but I'm not entirely sure at the moment, so we'll have to wait and see. Good Doctor back for the second half of that, which is really solid medical drama from David Shaw, the guy that made House. That's on Sky Witness on 29th of February at 9 p.m. And The Resident, which is another medical drama, second half of that season, comes back to Universal TV on 29th of January at 9 p.m. That's everything for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to mention.
Have you seen The Dark Room?
No.
The stage show?
I haven't, no.
That is something I highly recommend to people, which I forgot to mention. The Dark Room started off as a viral YouTube interactive video game.
Ah, right. I knew the name. Yes.
Yeah, it's John Robertson. He's also known as Robotron. He's a comedian, and he started off with this YouTube thing. He then started doing it as a stand-up style routine, a kind of off-the-cuff one, and it evolved from there into a proper thing which has been selling out absolutely everywhere, and it's got dates for most of the rest of this year. And right. For anyone that's ever played text adventure games of a certain age,
yes.
I'm assuming,
yes.
Which is basically games where all you had on screen back in the day for computer games was text, and you would say, where do you want to go in the room? Walk left, go right, yes. Find this, pick up that. It's a completely hilarious, ridiculous comedy version of that with audience participation.
Okay,
so he
cool.
is the kind of dungeon master character, completely and utterly playing this up, and it's just, the whole thing is just, you're in a dark room, there's an audience, there's a screen that just has four options of text and you can pick them, and he's just there with kind of a torch pointed at his face and a light up costume that looks to me like some kind of BMX armor with LED strips on,
right?
And he does this whole thing and the audience can pick what happens, and it's very, very funny. They've also got a computer game out on Steam,
okay.
as well, which is a CGI version of him which you can play at home, which is again very, very funny. So I would recommend to anyone that can get along with that, definitely have a go. The comedian John Robertson is wonderfully mad, I think is the way to describe him. He is definitely a character, and he enjoys that very much and plays that out very much, so I definitely recommend The Dark Room to anyone.
Okay,
that's it. I think that's the only thing I missed.
Cool. Okay, and where can they find you?
Oh, when they've finished googling The Dark Room, because I've used the slot I'm supposed to promote myself in to promote someone else.
Yes.
I am Trista Bytes, spelled B-Y-T-E-S, because I'm that geeky. I thought a pun would be funny, and I can be found obviously on the geektown.co.uk website, but also over on my YouTube channel as Trista Bytes, and also Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, all as Trista Bytes, because branding consistency,
of course. So for us, if you want to find all the latest air dates and news throughout the week, go to geektown.co.uk. want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk, leave a message on the website post, find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram @geektownuk. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.